Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we turn the record over and drop the needle.
Jim, are you sure you want to do that?
No, Patrick, I was referring to the record needle. Okay, and we are back in the basement, and Patrick, it's just water tonight?
It's just water tonight. This is a serious occasion. Yeah.
It seems kind of odd for talking about Velvet Underground and Nico that we're completely sober.
Well, you know, what we would have to do to get in the mood would be completely unethical, so we don't want to do that.
Well, yeah. We could follow Lou Reed in his final days and do some Tai Chi.
There you go. That's right, on the East River.
Yeah, the stuff that Lou and the band were writing and singing about wasn't quite, you know, like Guinness Stout, right?
No, it wasn't really a couple of beers in the basement.
It really kind of sounded more like this.
I don't know just where I'm going. Try for the kingdom if I can, 'cause it makes me feel like I'm a man when I put a spike into my vein. And I tell you, things aren't quite the same when I'm rushing on my run, and I feel just like Jesus' son. And I guess that I just don't know. And I guess that I just don't know.
We heard just a little bit of a song that goes on for slightly over 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm. The song is Heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a song that really kind of takes you through, I guess, sort of the experience of being on heroin, right?
Or tries to.
Drug. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose.
Yeah. And I would say even, I don't know, 17, 18 years later, when I heard this song that long after it was recorded, it was shocking to me. Like it really was like, you know, I had grown up in the suburbs and been sort of, you know, I guess fairly exposed to a lot of different things, but this to me was still a very shocking song. It was just very raw and scary. And, when it builds to those frightening crescendos, I didn't really know how to process it, and it took me a while to do so, and it ended up becoming one of my very favorite Velvet Underground songs, just the way it rises and falls and rises and falls, and how long it was, and you know,
yeah,
just the speed of it, and
the changing of tempo changes and all of that.
Brutal honesty about it was crazy. It
slows down, it takes you to these lows and sort of gets quiet, yeah, and then it gets kind of fierce again. And
I'm not sure he's singing about the experience of being a heroin addict or being a heroin user. I mean, he's trying to get inside the head of someone, but it's, I think it's very literary. I think he's writing,
yeah,
you know, a sort of a stream of consciousness song about the experience. And I'm not sure he's trying to capture his own personal experience.
Okay. And, you know, to me, I don't know if I was asked to play someone who would, you know, never heard a Velvet Underground song before, that might be the one I would pick. You know, I might just choose Heroin to say, here is representative of how they could be gentle and how they could be raw and how they could be ferocious, and yet they went on for a long time. And I don't know, maybe there could be others, but that might be up there. Maybe you'd pick Sister Ray, although that's a little extreme. But
Well, if you see these songs as being sort of mini dramas, this is definitely the most dramatic. Mm-hmm. This is the one that really has the arc. And a lot of these songs are about motion and they sort of stay in the same groove. This is one that definitely shifts and grows and it's more complex as far as that goes than any of the other songs.
Mm-hmm. And if you pulled it, the record out of its sleeve and just put on one side and didn't really know if it was side one or side two, this is a heck of a way to start side two, right? Yeah. Might chase you away from the record altogether.
That's a good point too.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's interesting. Talking about that, this record, you know, historically apparently sold some of the fewest copies, right, of records that came out. And I think it was, didn't Brian Eno have a famous quote? There was only 30,000 records sold or whatever, and everybody that bought one started a band. I don't know if that really was what he said.
Right. Well, it's been quoted so many times, it must be true.
Yeah, that's right.
But there's also a story to that, right? There was a lawsuit over a picture on the back of the cover that got the record pulled when it was first released. And so the commercial prospects, limited as they were further damaged by a guy named Eric Emerson, who needed the money because he'd been busted for drugs. And so he sued because his picture was on the back of the picture taken at the Exploding Plastic Inevitable,
right,
of a projection of his face, and he hadn't signed a release for it. So that was sort of the final straw on the commercial prospects of the record.
Right. And in some cases, they just put a sticker over it, the back completely, and some eventually airbrushed him out of other things. But yeah, and the label did not promote the record hardly at all, just because it was obviously so difficult to promote.
Are you saying that Heroin didn't get radio airplay?
I don't think, unless
it did Mark in Washington, D.C., starting in 1969. But yeah. I don't know about, my first experience with underground radio, I guess, was probably 68. And I don't remember hearing it at first at any of the shows I managed to pick up. But they did play it on HFS.
Yeah, maybe HFS and John Peel might have been the only people that were actually playing it, right?
Okay, so I think the song we're going to play next has a completely different tone.
It certainly does.
From that one. So you'll catch that right after this break.
Jim, I don't know about you, but I'm a relentless reviewer. I review everything.
Well, I know you used to review like records and shows and things like that, right?
Now I review like chicken and toasters and like fungus cream and everything. I just review it all the time. And I think that people should, you know, review our podcast.
They should.
Why not?
Give it a better review than the fungus cream, hopefully.
This is good fungus cream.
Well, I mean, if you need it, then you would give it a good review, exactly. I suppose. Yeah.
It's your time of need.
But hopefully you value our podcast in sort of a different way.
You'll need it in a different way, probably more regularly than fungus cream, let's hope.
Yeah. Let's hope so. Or may need to consult people beyond our, you know, depth of knowledge.
That's right. But, you know, I gave 5 stars to the fungus cream. I think 5 stars for Rock in the Suburbs.
I think that's very good advice, Dr. Patrick. What people can do is they can go on to iTunes.
Yes.
Find the show, search Rock in the Suburbs, or hopefully you've already subscribed, so it just comes right up.
Yep.
And then you can just click the 5-star button. And if it'd be really cool, too, if while you're there, you actually write like a little review of how much you like the show.
That'd be great.
Both of those things really help us. It elevates it in the iTunes platform. More people then discover the show. We build audience.
Immensely helpful.
And building audience will help keep the show going. So please, do that. It's totally free. It's just a nice thing to do for us.
And if you want to mention fungus cream, go ahead.
All right. Let's never say fungus cream again.
Good idea.
Okay, and we are back on Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us is
Mark Jenkins.
Thank you so much, Mark, for being here. So, Patrick, tell me a little bit about this next song, There She Goes Again. So we're coming off of the song Heroin, which, as you said, you know, and maybe where you want to start listeners who are unfamiliar with the Velvet Underground, just to give them a sense of sort of the challenging nature of their sound and the band and what they can do and the dynamic qualities and all of that. But then you get kind of a nice pop song, right?
Yeah, it's probably the catchiest song on the record, I would think. It's always been interesting to me, the sort of the stop-start you know, tempo construction of the song, on the way there's some space in there, and suddenly the band was showing you a little bit of a different side, you know, which they'd kind of hinted at earlier on the record. And it's always been really interesting to me, and this is something we talked about last couple of weeks ago, but, you know, your very first perfect pop song was also called There She Goes Again, but by a different
There She
band.
Goes.
There She Goes. I'm sorry. But, you know, There She Goes, to me, I always tie those two songs together, right? So it's really interesting that Velvet Underground was doing something really pop, and then, you know, The Lahs did something really pop, too. So this song, I don't know, did it invent kind of like jangle rock?
It does have a definite jangly quality to it, right?
I don't know. And what always amazed me about this song was the way they sped up at the very end, right? When it's bye, 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 and then they started playing a lot faster at the end. I love that.
Right.
But this is a rewrite of Marvin Gaye's Hitchhike. And so it's essentially musically the most derivative song on the album. And it also comes from sort of a musical tradition that you don't hear that much of on the record. I mean, you mentioned Bo Diddley before, but most of this record has not very earthy quality to it. It's sort of the beginning of sort of non-bluesy rock and roll in that sense.
Right.
Whereas this song is pretty clearly out of the Motown playbook.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting story about Johnny Marr when he wrote There's a Light That Will Never Go Out, that taking that riff to begin the song intentionally to show how cool he was. But also, you say it's a perfect pop song. This seems to be about a woman who's running away from an abusive relationship. I mean, I don't think the Monkees ever recorded a song like this.
No. Or the Lahs, probably not. Yeah.
Well, the Lahs might have, but.
Yeah, they might have. that's, you know, and this is right up your alley, Jim. You love the sort of the sunny, jangly song with a great hook that's really underneath, very dark lyrically.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. It's one of my favorite
better
things.
Better hitter.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this was another song that REM covered too, and you obviously.
Oh, they did. Yeah, that's
see
right.
See that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense.
Completely in their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so should we keep going?
Yeah, why
maybe
not?
Tomorrow?
Yeah, why not? Finish up tomorrow.
I'm tired right now.
Okay.
Need to get some rest.
It's late on Thursday.
Come back tomorrow because it's a marathon day on this Track by Track.
That's right.
We're going to do 3 songs.
It's going to get heavy.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Okay, so what you want to do is, again, tomorrow, listen to Rock in the Suburbs because you're already listening.
And if you've come this far, you might as well go ahead.
And you're already listening
every day. Sorry.
That's all right. I was trying to set you up there.
Missing my own cues.
That's fine. You can find us on iTunes or Audio Boom or Stitcher or TuneIn. You can also find us at suburbspod.com. And you can email the show rock@suburbspod.com. And you can find us on Twitter or Facebook @suburbspod. And you can call our phone line and leave a message for us, and we'll put you on the show. The number is 612-440-1984. Thanks again, Mark Jenkins, for being with us. We got one more day of this.
Okay.
All right. I hope you're up for it. I think he wants to escape now. I think he's ready to go. So, okay, I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. Dun, 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 dun. I mean, just 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. I mean, and just like three different notes,